Welcome to König Kunst, the podcast by König Galerie. I am Johann König and I'm speaking to the Mexican artist Bosco Zori. Bosco is known for his minimalistic sculptures and highly textured paintings. Bosco, thank you so much for taking the time. Maybe to understand, how did you start becoming an artist? When was art actually appearing in your horizon, in your life?
Well, since I was very young, Johann, I was diagnosed with a deficit of attention, hyperactivity, and dyslexia. And my mother, instead of medicating me at the time, that was the most common thing, she found these art classes that I used to go 2 times a week. That was a kind of a Montessori therapy art classes that they really worked very well with me. It was the only time of the week that I was feeling calm and focused. So art became a necessity in my life since I was very, very young, since I was 6 years old or 5 years old.
So where are we there? Like in the 70s?
See, 76, 75, something like that.
So, and this was like painting, drawing course?
See, painting and sculpture too. Actually, it's funny because my mother last week, 2 weeks ago, she called me and said, I find one of your paintings from that time. And she told me, I can see it coming, your style. She told me it has, for a child at that age, too much painting, too much structure.
And when did it surface that making art can be even a professional life?
See, I mean, that's a difficult decision, as you know, to become a professional artist when you want to have a family, and it's complicated. So when I got married, I went to live in Paris with my wife, Lucia, and I was working there with a friend of my father half a day. And then the rest of the day, we had an apartment of 2 rooms. And in that apartment, I began to do these drawings on paper with watercolor for a whole year. And then when we were leaving Paris, I took them to frame some of them in Saint-Germain-des-Prés, in Rue des Beaux-Arts. And when I went to pick them up, the guy of the framing told me that he had some of his clients that wanted to buy the watercolors. And that was the first hint I got that I couldn't be able to live from the thing that I loved the most, that was art. Then we went back to Mexico, and we stayed there for 1 year for my wife to finish his economic degree. And we went back to Barcelona, and then I took 1 year off, and I said, well, I'm going to try to be a professional artist. And things in Barcelona begin to work very, very well, very organic, but very, very well. And from that on, I became a professional artist, and I have lived 100% from art.
So how old were you at that time in Paris?
26, I think, 25, 24.
So what was your profession?
Well, I was helping my father. My father had businesses, different businesses in Mexico, and I was helping him in the office. He was shareholder in a chemical factory, and also he was dealing with food for animals, stuff like that.
But the materials had no influence on your practice?
No, yes, boy, because my father is a chemist. He has a PhD from MIT. And my mother, she's a philosopher, Marxist philosopher. And I grew up very close to art in the whole sense of the world, and music, theater, cinema, sculpture. And also my father, it's a kind of this crazy scientific, you know. And so we grew up with experiments on the house, with fires, things on the refrigerator with experiments. So all this kind of focusing on research, on experimenting, and very chemistry part of my work comes from there.
The work you did then at the Framer, you would already consider this part of your oeuvre?
Sí, yes, yes. I mean, when you see it, of course, it has much more influence from other artists that I still admire. But it was the beginning of my own language, in a way.
And how did it continue then? So you suddenly realized that making art is a way to make a living. And so did you decide then to go all in?
See, when I went to Barcelona, I decided to go all in. I mean, for me, anyway, doing art is a necessity. I have done it all my life, and I need to do it. If I stop doing art for 1 week, I begin to get very nervous, very unstable maybe. So I decided to give it a try, and then we rented an apartment in Barcelona, and then everything was very organic. The landlord came one day and he loved the works, and he introduced me to my gallery that I still have in Barcelona with Carlos Taché. That was at that time the most important gallery in Barcelona by far. Mm-hmm. And he didn't took me into the gallery immediately, but he begins to help me and introduce me to other smaller galleries and collectors, etc.
And maybe you can elaborate a little bit how you work, the materials you use, and how you process them.
My work is very based on the process, on how the accident, the non-control, the unpredictable, the passing of time, to work with organic materials makes a unique result. I mean, my work, it's about uniqueness, about irrepeatability. And one day when I was in Barcelona, at the beginning in Barcelona, I had a lot of influence from the Arte Povera and Tapies and the informalist, the Catalan informalist and the art, the expressionists. But then one day I went to a show in Madrid in the Thyssen-Bornemisza Museum to see a show of Braque. And when I was coming back in the train, I bought the catalog for my mother because she loves Braque.
Yeah.
Came back, I read in the catalog that Braque, in order to give some texture to his paintings, his old paintings, that actually they don't have almost any texture, he used sawdust. And that's when I came with the idea of mixing the sawdust with the pigment and make these organic paintings, and that become my way of expression and my own voice. And I work very physical. I mean, I put the in the case of the paintings, I put the stretches in horizontal. I begin to add a lot of mattery and texture, always trying to work with organic materials, with the elements, in order to get always this kind of irrepeatable outcome that even if I want to make it again, it's impossible.
And maybe you can explain in more detail, because time plays a significant role, and because it's interesting how that comes together with your impatience, but at the same time your work needs many months and sometimes years to evolve to age to the point you want it to be.
See, I mean, something that I have learned being an artist is to have more patience. I mean, as you mentioned, the passing of time in my paintings is very important, because it's when they begin to crack and to do their own process. On reality, my intervention in one of my paintings is for a few days, maybe a week, the most, but then the painting becomes its own animal and begins to evolve and crack depending on the temperature, on the humidity, on the materials that I use. That's on the case of the paintings. In the case of the clay works, it, as you said, it takes almost 1 year just for them to dry before being able to burn them in the kiln. And on reality, also with the spheres, my intervention is for a few days. Then we have just to take care of them and let them dry in order that they don't explode or dissolve.
And so this means you create them once, and then, but aren't you like watering them and revisit them over the period of time?
Yes. I'm always, in the case of the paintings, I come every day and see how they're cracking. But once I see the first crack on the painting, I stop completely my intervention on the painting, because I think that if I begin to make interventions when the painting is already beginning to get alive, I ruin the organic process of the painting. That's in the case of the paintings. In the case of the spheres, I go every few months to the studio and check them. I have somebody there in the studio that check that they are drying accordingly, and maybe to cover them with plastic if they are drying too fast. We have to be very careful with the process, because otherwise we can lose them when we cook them.
You do this in multiple studios, but your, I would say, also most known place is Casa Wabi. Maybe you can tell us about the project and how it came together.
When I came to New York to live, first of all, I was invited in 2004 to do a residency in Tokyo, that I spent there 3 months in a brand new residence. The name was Tokyo Wonderside. And I have always been a big fan of architecture, and I love Tadao Ando since long time. But when I was there, I was able to visit some of the Ando works. And when I fell in love with his architecture, because I think it has a lot to do with my work. I mean, it works with the elements, with the passing of time. So when I came to New York and I begin to be a little successful, I was right to give a big chunk of what I was doing back to first my country, Mexico, second my colleagues, artists. So I decided to create this art residency, art center in Oaxaca, in the coast of Mexico, in order to give back. I mean, I think there is a social responsibility on every artist to give back as much as possible. I mean, we are very, very, very lucky to be able to live from what we love the most and be able to live from something that can change society. At the end, I think art gives us the tools to understand better the universe, better ourselves, our relationship with other humans, our relationship with nature. So that's why I wanted to create this art center that will give back to the local communities, but also to the artists that goes there. It's a residency that we receive 6 artists at a time. And we don't ask them for anything back, just to make a very strong project with the local communities. And that it becomes an exchange of knowledge between the local communities that are there and the artist. And it has become a very successful program.
That makes me think of the project we are planning for Art Basel at Art Parcours, which also involves the local community. Maybe you can share the concept behind it.
When it looked like the pandemic was ending in New York, I decided to do this performance that the name is Tabula Rasa, that means new beginning in a way. These clay spheres, but in the clay spheres I put a seed of corn, and we did the number of days that the COVID was officially announced in New York at that time. And then we make an installation in Washington Square Park. We leave the installation for a few hours, like an art installation. It looked beautiful. But then people was able to pick up one sphere and take it home and raise the corn. He put the sphere in a pot and then water, and the corn was growing. And that was talking about how at the end life prevails, how there is always a new beginning. And just to give some hope to everybody after all this very difficult time. So I just made it again in Tampa, in the Tampa USF Museum. And that's what we're going to do in Basel. I mean, we're going to invite the kids of Basel to do the clay spheres with me. We will put the seed, and then we will leave the installation for almost a week. And then on Sunday, people will be able to pick up the spheres, bring them home, put them in a pot, put water, and bring life again.
Mm-hmm. So it's like a circle. How many spheres are you envisioning?
We're going to do 365 spheres. And then on the back, we're going to put 28 sack paintings with a lunar cycle.
Beautiful. And speaking about future projects, you're also having a project at the Venice Biennale. What to expect there?
Well, this is a Palacio Benjamin Grimaldi with the Foundation Albero de Oro that they proposed since last year to do a project together. It's curated by Deakin Hart, the head curator of the Noguchi Museum, and Daniela Ferretti, an Italian, great Italian curator. And the concept, it's part of the official program of the Biennale. And the idea, it's the name of the show is What Goes Around Comes Around. And it's an idea that some 4 paintings there in residency 2 weeks ago. And then what we're going to do is an appropriation of the palace and make it as if I was living there. This palace belonged to a commerce people in Venice, like almost all of them. And the concept is to bring all these materials from Mexico, clay, the sack paintings, my paintings, the volcanic rocks, some other type of sculptures, and appropriate totally of the palace, like if I was living there, and if these all materials were part of the commerce exchange between Venice and Latin America. The paintings I did there, I did them with a cochinilla, that it was the red color that the Spanish bring from Mexico that changed completely the painting in Europe. I did 2 paintings with that. And the concept is to talk about this exchange of goods, of culture between nations. So that's why the name, it's what goes around comes around. Like the information, the goods, the culture goes now both ways in all the world.
So do you also envision your work almost having like an afterlife?
Yes, of course.
So you said when a painting starts to crack, you stop intervening.
Yes.
And then you just leave it to the to the elements to come to a final state. And then do you still then judge if it's worked out?
Yes. Normally, all of them work out. There are very few that I destroy because they really don't function at all. But I try to accept as much as possible the accidents. And sometimes paintings that you think that they're not, just to tell you a story, a few years ago, I was in my studio in Barcelona, in New York, with two assistants that they were helping me. It was a big red painting. And we finished the red painting and I didn't like it so much, being honest, but my studio assistants, they convinced me to keep it. Mm-hmm. They said, well, let it dry, and we come in. They were tired and they didn't want it to begin again. And then I went for vacation, like 15 days. And then I come back and the painting was one of my best paintings ever because of the crack and everything was perfect, you know.
When we speak of color, sometimes you use indigo. And how do you choose, and how, where is the color coming from?
It's very casual. I mean, here in my studio, every time I go, I travel around to Morocco or to Japan or to India or Mexico. I always try to buy, if I try to go to pigment stores or the markets to see what kind of pigments do they have. And when I find a pigment that it's interesting to me, I buy it in bulk, because I need a lot of pigment for one painting. One painting of mine has at least 15 kilos of pigment. And then I have them here in the studio, and it depends on the day. Sometimes I begin to one different pigment a day, or sometimes when I'm preparing a show, like the one we had in London, I thought of a concept, and I was working for a couple of months with this kind of carbon black pigment and this very special gold.
And the piece you talked earlier about, which we are going to present on Kirchplatz, I think, in Basel, it connects to the piece you did on Washington Square Park, but then also again you did at the South Bank in London as a sort of protest to Donald Trump.
Well, yes. That was a piece also that I did at Washington Square Park at the very beginning of the presidency of Donald Trump. I was doing I have this big installation of clay bricks in Casa Guavi that the name is the Atlantes, that it's 64 big cubes of 2 meters by 2 meters made by bricks. And I was with the people that helped me, all the craftsmen that helped me to do the bricks there one day at my studio Casa Guavi, taking a beer. And then I saw how do they stock the bricks like in a wall. And I came with the idea, because if you remember, Trump was saying that Mexicans, we were going to build and pay the wall.
Yeah.
So I came with the idea, say, well, these bricks we did in Mexico, they were made by Mexicans. Why don't we bring it to Washington Square Park? We did a wall of 2 meters by 12 meters. And then it was a beautiful installation because it stayed as an installation for 8 hours. And then we invited everybody that wanted to take one brick. And these bricks, all of them had my signature, so they went like a kind of unique edition, each one. And the concept was, well, to talk how absorbed are walls, how easily they can be dismantled. They can be raised very easily, but also dismantled very easily. And then how illogical are walls, not walls for between countries, but walls, racial walls, economic walls, gender walls. It was beautiful because when we finished installing the wall, and then I went for lunch and for a drink. And when I came back, there were like 8 blocks of people, you know, making a line to get one of the bricks.
The land where you built Casa Guavi, how did you find it, and how does it have like personal meaning?
Well, I used to, since I was very young, me and my cousins and my friends, we used to go camping very close by, since we were 12 years old, and I fell in love with the place. Puerto Escondido has a very special energy. The Mexican Pacific has a very special energy. And when I was in Japan doing a show, with my gallery there, with Sky the Bathhouse. One day my father called me and said, listen, I have been offered this piece of land. At that time, prices were not as now. And I was able to buy this land. And then I approached Ando several times. He rejected my offer.
How did you approach him? You just wrote him or?
See, at that time there was not even email. Since I went to Japan in 2004, I began to approach him to do something together. And he was rejecting me always very politely. And then one day when I came to New York, a friend of us introduced us. He came to the studio. He loved the red paintings. And he told me, well, let me think about it.
Yeah.
And then you remember this big storm that happened in New York, Sandy?
Yes, the hurricane.
The hurricane, Sandy. My studio is on the pier. I have water in both sides. It's a big warehouse on the pier. So it was totally destroyed at that time. 17 paintings, everything was destroyed, computers, pigments, everything. But there was a very famous picture in the newspaper that all the bay near my studio became red because I had all these pigments that they were not so easy to dissolve. So all the front of my studio in the bay of Red Hook was red.
So you are also a land artist.
Yes. somebody sent the picture to Ando and he saw the studio totally destroyed and he told me, well, I'm going to do it. And we begin the process.
And it was not only Ando, it was also six other architects.
Yeah, see, then after we finished that project, I begin to have encounters, but very organic encounters with Álvaro Siza, for an example. I was doing a show in Oporto and my galleries at that time, he sent the invitation of the show to Siza and Siza was interested in the work. So he invited me he told my galleries and I told him, please, I would love to meet him. I love his architecture. And I went to have to his office to have a drink with him and talk about it. And I told him, well, could you be interested in doing our clay pavilion for the local communities? And he told me, yes. And he did pro bono. And it's a beautiful, it's a masterpiece. And that's a place where we take three classrooms a week from the local communities of kids to go and do clay and reconnect with clay. We do it with classical music. Then we show them the whole foundation. We put them a movie. We have a small movie theater. We put them a movie with content. And then same with Kengo Kuma. With Kengo Kuma, I was in Japan and a mutual friend told me that we should meet. And we went to a restaurant. We took several sakes. And then Kengo told me that he just finished a shrine in Kamakura for Beatles.
Mm-hmm.
And then I came with the idea and say, well, why don't you do our chicken coop? And he said, yes. You know, like everything has been very organic.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Like your work. And tell me, you just mentioned school classes and yourself being an artist by nature and also can be called autodidact. Did you ever think about teaching?
No, I have been invited to several universities to give a lecture, but I don't know about studying art. I think it's a very different approach. All the friends I had in Barcelona at that time, we were like 30 or 40 artists, young artists. The ones that study art, they were always complaining that they were already like dictated some things that it was very difficult for them to experiment. So actually, when somebody asked me, for their kids, they want to be artists, I always tell them, listen, send them to be an studio assistant with some artist, or go to Berlin and if they have money to have a studio there. I don't believe so much in studying art. I mean, I think it's something so natural and so organic that.
But I think that the exchange with other artists is very important. And I think was also important for your formative years, no?
Super important. Actually, something that was, it's a reality is that when I arrived to Barcelona, I didn't know anything about mixing, like technique, nothing. I mean, I knew what I knew from my art classes when I was young. So a lot of the artist friends at that time, they showed me how to stretch a canvas, how to do certain mixtures, no? Stuff like that.
You also worked with an artist, right?
Yes, yes.
Who did you work with?
There was an artist, Frederic Amat, that showed me some things. And then I didn't work with him, but I was lucky enough to meet Tapies, And we went for a one day for a long conversation, and he gave me a lot of advice that I, for really, for me, was to meet my hero, you know.
And in what way did he had influence on your work?
Well, Tapies, all the Catalan informalists, I have always admired them, because they always said that the matter has its own energy. They believe on the energy of matter, of the energy of things.
And when you say that it was important for you to learn from him and others, which advice would you give to a young artist?
First of all, to be open to experiment. I mean, not to get married with a way of doing things. The more that you experiment, the more roads that are open for you to research. And second of all, to work in the studio and work in the studio and work in the studio and work in the studio, to make your studio your home and be there painting and painting and painting and painting and experimenting. I mean, the most important thing for an artist, I think, is to find your own voice. I don't know if you agree.
100%, yeah. And I think that's the most challenging.
You just find that experimenting, you know. If you try to copy or it's impossible. But if you experiment, you will find some accidents that you can appropriate yourself and make it your own.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think then you need to master it and challenge it and go back to your own work and challenge your
100%.
Own work. And but at the same time, of course, you also need to be aware of what has been made and what dialogue you are contributing to.
See, information. That's something that I always say when I give a lecture. I tell, listen, you can think that you're Picasso in a desert island, but maybe what you did, it was done already 60 years ago. You know what I mean? No. So you have to research. You have to read. You have to investigate. You have to go to see shows, to go to see museums.
And the program you do at Casa Wabi, can it be understood in dialogue with your work, or is it completely independent from this?
No, it's completely independent. I mean, there are some curators that they have called it my social sculpture,
mm-hmm.
but it's completely independent. I mean, I have my studio there and I work there. And of course, when I visit the studio, when the artist let me visit their studios at Casa Wabi, it's always I see magnificent things that at the end becomes information and becomes part of my life, and maybe in the future they can be I can have some influence from them as they have from me or from other artists. I love to go to artists' studios. Love.
But I would think also that the landscape there has a strong influence on your work, no?
Sí, completely. I mean, it's a very strong vegetation, you know, near the sea, kind of desert, with very big insects, you know, reptiles, etc. But that's the beauty of life. I mean, my work talks about that, about the organicness, how life it's magical. How should we be connected with nature, with other humans? And it's fundamental for my work, this kind of energy, and to remind that life is just a moment, no? And that we're going to be here just a moment.
Yeah, that reminds me of this quote we shared by Seotsu Yanagi. You sent me this old book titled The Unknown Craftsman.
Yes, it's a beautiful book.
Yeah. Great. I think that we can look forward to the Venice Biennale and also to Art Basel. What else is coming up?
Well, I still have my solo show at the Dallas Museum of Art. They are showing the spheres in their sculptural garden. Then, bueno, the Venice Biennale, the thing at Art Basel. I'm opening a show in the building of the Triennale of Milan on July or June.
Is it a special building?
It's going to be, we're going to show 12 spheres.
Oh, beautiful.
And in the Triennale building, and then, bueno, something on the Harvard Museum next year. Also, I'm opening this new space in upstate Monticello, the one I show you, remember, the very soon.
Is this something you can talk about already?
Yes, I mean, it's this space, Monticello, it's a place where I have my house upstate. It's one of the second most poor counties in New York, and I found this very old warehouse that it was a Buick distributor on the 50s. It's a Art Deco building, and I have been renovating it for more than a year, and we're planning to open in May with a group of friends, and the concept was for me to buy this place in order in paying art storage and have the works on boxes to have it there, all the work open to the public. And I'm going to do a show with some friends. One is artist of yours with Jose Davila.
Yeah, yeah.
But also it's Mario Garcia Torres, Stefan Brugerman, Hector Zamora, Izumi Kato, Gabriela Galván, several artist friends that they're going to give us work that they have in boxes in their storage to have them there open to the public for free, of course, in a non-profit. It's going to be curated by Decking Heart, the same curator that is curating the Venice Pavilion.
And are you working with an architect there too? Or you?
Yes, I work there with Alberto Calach, that is an amazing Mexican architect, for me the best one. And when he just helped me with some ideas of the renovation, and it's an open space. It's at almost 3,000 square meters open space with an old wood ceiling. It's very beautiful, with a beautiful light. And I'm planning to do my work in conversation with other friends and change it every year.
Beautiful. Great. Very much looking forward to it. Bosco, thank you so much for taking the time. And I see you in Basel, Venice, and hopefully soon in Berlin.
See you very soon, Johan. Have a very nice day.